I'm going to tell you something that's going to seem crazy. When you go through there, it's 1960. I need you to prevent the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Okay, we are back here on our third episode coverage of 11-22-63, but we are covering episode two. And guys, I am back here again with Jeff Ferry and BJ Cramp. Guys, welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Hey, Craig.
And on this episode, we're going to be talking about episode two, The Kill Floor, which, Jeff Ferry, I know that this was really an important aspect of the story for you in terms of your hopes when they were adapting the show for Hulu.
Yeah, after the first episode, which we've all kind of put up as kind of a little bit of a mess, a lot of the book, especially the first quarter of the book, really dovetails into this whole Dunning affair. There's a ton of buildup for it. There's weeks of research that he puts into it. And by the time the scene finally hits in the book, it is nail-biting by the time it gets there with everything that leads up to it, with the past makes him sick, and you know somebody figures out what he's up to at the last minute, but that's like a last-minute reveal in the book. And it doesn't happen in the show, but in the book, as we discussed, the first time he tries to stop it, one of the kids still gets killed. So he has to reset and go back through, which didn't happen in this episode, and I didn't think it was going to, because I think they've made it very clear that he's not going to do a reset.
Yeah, and that
one
was
one time through.
Yeah, and that was really one of the most disappointing aspects of the episode, and the way they handled it is in the book you've got him trying to stop the murder in the traditional or as it happened in the history that he knows, and then eventually it just becomes him killing Dunning in a graveyard before he has a chance to do it. And for me, that really, it adds a whole different layer to Jake's character. BJ, what were your overall feelings of the whole Dunning storyline as it happened in the book?
Yeah, in the book, it was sort of his way to test the butterfly effect. That was a big part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, he doesn't even seem to be thinking in those terms at all on the show. But he really in the book he makes it clear that he cares more about saving the Dunning family than he does about saving Kennedy. Even so, and here it's just like, oh, I might as well do this on the way home, you know, in the show. So yeah, it's probably one of the better parts of the book, especially the early. You know, I really enjoy the book. Maybe the last 200 pages are, you know, by far the most enjoyable part of the book, probably. And then as far as this is probably a good part, and then it goes into the really long stuff at the high school,
mm-hmm.
and with all the multiple variety shows. And,
yeah.
You know, I guess we'll get into that later. But, yeah, this is one of the better parts of the book. And the episode, would it be maybe 95% of this episode has nothing to do with what happens in the book?
Yeah, I would
it's
say that.
It's kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I listened to some of Bridget Carpenter, who wrote, I don't know if she wrote every episode. She's written the first two, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to her on the Nerdist Writers Room. Is that what I forget what the podcast is called, but
I know the one you're talking of.
Yeah, I didn't listen to the whole thing, but she says multiple times how much she loves this book, what a great book it is, what a huge fan of Stephen King she is. And then she takes the approach of just rewriting it completely, which seems strange to me. There seems to be a dichotomy there. But
yeah, yeah. And my main issue with that idea is I can understand if you're adapting something and there's overt challenges that you have to overcome. Either you have a 2-hour running time you're going to be working in, or it's not going to work for the medium that you're doing. But in this case, with multiple episodes that are around an hour each with a 90-minute pilot, I don't think your hands were really too much tied from a storytelling perspective. And I'd understand if there were storytelling beats that you had to correct. And I know on the last episode, Jeff, you pointed out, and actually BJ, I think you pointed it out too, you know, the major plot hole that, that King created with the little girl who gets paralyzed. You know, I can understand trying to correct that kind of story element, but in my opinion, they're correcting or attempting to correct story elements that don't need to be corrected. I mean, Jeff, do you have any feelings on that?
Well, the one point I could see is why – I understand why he interacts with Frank Donningmore, because if he's going to be your bad guy for this episode, you can't – in the book, he just stalks him.
Mm-hmm.
That's not very entertaining to watch, to just watch James Franco sneak around for 45 minutes. And, I mean, that's entertaining in the book. Like, okay, so if I'm the – let's say I'm the producer of this, and I'm telling you, you guys are the writers. And I'm like, well, listen – I know this is great in the book, but we're not having this. So you need to take two or three of those characters that he interacts with while he's doing all this, and you need to make that one character. So he interacts with the bartender, and he interacts with this other guy who knows him. Yeah, guess what? That's the same guy now that has the backstory with him. And he needs to interact with this guy because you can't – here's where I'll side with them. In a show, you can't just hear about how bad this guy is.
You have to see it.
You got to see it, which – I really don't mind their interaction. My only problem with their interaction is what happens probably should have been over two episodes. It just seemed like it was so fast.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm in town. I met you. We're going out. You do this crazy thing with the cow, which on its own would be a pretty decent scene, but it feels like it's like boom, boom, boom. They're just hitting you with it.
Yeah.
I'm here. I'm here. I'm here. And everything feels like it's in like fast forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. Like it didn't need to be.
Yeah.
Because – like you guys alluded to in the book, there's a big – I hate to say, you said the part at the high school is the part that's slow for you guys. The part that's slow for me is actually the part after that. Mm-hmm. When he first starts stalking Oswald, there's like 150 pages of him stalking Oswald that in a TV series could be 10 minutes.
Sure.
Like him being – him sitting at the house and doing this and that, and he's watching him, and he's all the stuff about Marina. Like they're not going to go into all that stuff. You're never going to hear any of that. So that's where you could trim. This was the part you really could have sunk your teeth into.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like they really missed the opportunity.
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, this really sort of helps define, Jake Epping as a character. And it's interesting that you mentioned that we have to see how bad Dunning is, where I'm not entirely sure that I sort of fall on that side of the fence because I think it's almost it could have been even more effective if you have this guy who's incredibly charming and on the surface seems like a decent guy except for his womanizing, who for whatever reason decides to kill his entire family. I think there could have been a lot of value to approaching it that way. But I can see, I guess, both sides of the argument. BJ. What's your opinion on that, you know, overtly showing how bad he is versus the way it was handled in the book?
It seems really formulaic to me. You know, the taking him to hit the cow with a sledgehammer, that scene seemed like I've seen it a million times. This is a way to show he's a bad guy. He's got these two henchmen who just cackle at whatever he does. And, you know, they're such stereotypical henchmen. And I don't know if they're going to try to establish how bad of a guy Frank Dunning is. It could have been done a lot better than this, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But they're making we're talking about the book they're turning into a show. And this episode has nothing to do with the book. It's a complete rewrite, practically. So I don't know. It's a really strange approach to me because I couldn't have imagined an episode of this show that was going to have almost nothing from that's actually from the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a really crazy approach. I'm suspecting this is probably going to be an anomaly. I don't think there's going to be, well, I guess I shouldn't say that, but
mm-hmm.
I don't know if there are going to be any more episodes that are this far removed from the book.
I think they're all going to be like this.
You think so?
Yeah.
But you know, The big idea in the show is Jake's going to try to send them on this trip so they're not home. but then he's just going to kill him the next weekend. I mean, that's not going to solve your problem.
That was my,
I think that goes back to the main problem. Well, one of the main problems with this is they took a character who the main guy is Jake from the story. His whole thing in the story is, although he makes mistakes and screws things up, he's overall a fairly intelligent guy. And in this show, he is a moron. Besides the fact that he's not – he at no point is pushing the story forward. He is completely reactive to what happens. He's very proactive in the book. Like, he's out there. He's trying to figure out what's going on. He's using Al's notes. He's not like, oh, gee whiz, I guess I'll just show up on the night before, on the night it happens, and hope everything goes my way.
Well, and another thing I was thinking of from the book, Jake Epping is a lot in his head about the butterfly effect. And, like, you know, he's really worried at one point that he might run into Lee Harvey Oswald in the stairwell, and that alone could change history. So if he's going to go to this bar and meet Frank Dunning – right there, is he still going to kill his family on the same night then? You're already changing everything. And so, yeah, he's an idiot in the show compared to the book. And I just thought that bar scene was hilarious because the bartender tells Frank Dunning, hey, there's a guy over there who says he knows you. Frank Dunning doesn't know this guy, but he just goes and sits down and just starts shooting the shit with the guy. Never asks, how do I know you? You know? Mm-hmm. And then there was, I don't remember what the story was that Jake Epping was telling him that was really bad when they had a cut to show like that Jake was getting drunk. And I don't know. I thought that was a really terrible scene in the bar and it didn't make any sense. And then if you think about it right there, he quite probably already altered all the history he's trying to change anyways. And how is he going to be in the right place at the right time if he doesn't know what the time's going to be anymore, which they talk a lot about in the book, but they seem to be ignoring that in the show.
Yeah, yeah. And well, one other thing I think that was really well executed in the book was, I guess, the character that was sort of an amalgamation in the episode, but the bartender and the guy who ends up intervening when Jake is going to save the family. And in the book, you really got these hints that something was going on with that guy. Whereas in the episode, I had read the book and I didn't even make that connection. Was that something that you were aware of, Jeff?
Oh my God. It was almost like Chekhov's gun. It was just like, you see the bartender and you see he's a little squirrely around Frank and they're all treating him like garbage. And then he just inexplicably shows up later. You couldn't have had another scene where he, you know, he sees that guy outside. Like, remember, he runs into him two or three times in the book. He keeps seeing him outside. He goes into a bar and he sees the guy sneak out the back. And he knows the guy's – he thinks – he knows the guy's onto him in the book. And he starts thinking that Frank is sending the guy after him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the big reveal when he says, well, I know you're one of Frank's boys. That he says, well, no, he killed my sister. I'm trying to explain how this whole episode goes. It's almost like I told somebody this story. Like, I had read the book, and then I told someone this story. And then, like, 5 days later, from memory, they tried to write down what I said. And this is what they came up with. That's why, like, plot threads that are – I mean, I guess this points to what a good writer king is. Stuff that is so subtly handled in the book that just weaves together like a nice tapestry. And then here, it's just like – to you know, to borrow something from the story. It's like they beat you over the head with a sledgehammer with it. Instead of just proving this man is menacing by a few minor actions he makes, you know, something he says at his deli, you know, an offhanded comment. He could have said one comment to Jake that was just menacing enough to be like, wow, this guy's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, you know, a 10-minute scene of him bashing the cow's head in. There, I mean, there's just much more subtle ways to do it. Like in the book, he just sees the wife all beat up. He doesn't walk in and see a guy beat, you know, the wife getting beat in a butcher shop. And the guy is so on to you. I mean, it's – I know we keep waiting for this all to turn around. And you guys are hoping it'll kind of meld back into the book. But I'm seeing two episodes now. I've seen no indication that it's going to – you know, they're going to course correct at any point.
Yeah, yeah. Now, before we get too deep into this, I want to go to the beginning of the episode because I thought the way the episode started – was really interesting because in the book we have the sort of the first person account from Jake, which in this instance it's really effective because it's basically him writing. I didn't think the show was going to take that approach, although I think it really would have helped if this show did have some form of narration. But I think the fact that the episode starts without Jake being present for it, for me, it was a little off-putting because we're supposed to be seeing this world through Jake's eyes. And for me, they already broke a rule that they had sort of set up with the first episode. BJ, do you have any feelings on that, or is that something that you noticed?
Yeah, the episode begins with a scene that has nothing to do with the book.
Mm-hmm.
A completely brand new, reimagined. It's completely removed from the book. And I'm just going to say it. I don't think this episode is an example of good writing. This mm-hmm. is not good writing. And this opening scene is an example of trying. It's trying to be good writing, but the scene in the end has nothing to do with what happens in the episode, really. So it's just this little vignette that's supposed to be clever or revealing, but it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason for this scene. It doesn't set up anything. It doesn't have any payoff. It's just, I guess, an introduction to the kid, but I just, why?
It didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and why is this episode a completely new thing? It's nothing to do with the book. The entire episode, it's really strange. It's all new. So yeah. That's a really odd approach to, you know, making a book into a TV show or into a miniseries, and you have a complete entire episode that is a completely newly written thing. It's just very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to do that, you better do a good job of it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what's the point?
Yeah, that also reminded me of like studio notes type thing
mm-hmm.
of like somebody had already written a script and they were like, well, no, we need a scene here to introduce this kid or nobody's going to know who it is because, you know, everyone watching TV is an idiot. This also reminds me of like having done a little bit of writing. This is a problem that I've actually run into before where you've written everything in first person. We've seen everything in Jake's point of view. And then you suddenly make a hard right, and now you're in third person. Mm-hmm. We're now seeing things that he has no access to. If this was written and you turned it in, your editor would be like, oh, you need to change this because you went first person, and then you suddenly are showing us a third person something you have no access to.
Yeah.
You can't see this. You didn't witness this.
Yeah.
And that would have all been cut.
Yeah. I mean, for me, that was a huge rule break, and right now it opens the door for us to see this kind of information being disseminated through the remainder of the series where you're seeing information that potentially Jake isn't going to have access to.
And also what I thought immediately was as soon as the kid comes into the soda shop or wherever Jake is sitting, I thought, okay, Jake's going to go do something about these bullies because now he knows this kid, Harry, the child Harry that he knows, you know, when he's old, an old man is being bullied. He sees the evidence of it. He's going to do something about it, right? Nope. It never comes up again.
Mm-hmm.
So what was the point of this scene then? It could have had a payoff and it wouldn't have taken very long. So
I have a question for you. Do you think later on down the road, are we going to see scenes from other characters' point of view? Are we going to see scenes that just involve Oswald where Jake's not present? Where in the book, the whole point is he doesn't have that information.
Yeah.
He only knows what he sees and what he hears. So he's working on incomplete information.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a real problem for me because I think once they did it in this episode, it opens the door to do it again. And any scenes that take place in the book that Jake isn't present for, he's hearing those recordings that he made. That's a vital part of the book. And I can understand changing first person, point of view, in certain cases. But in this one, it seems so integral to the story that Jake is working on information that only he has access to either through things that he witnesses or through Al's notes, which sometimes he even has to verify. So for me, that was really a cardinal sin of a rule break.
Yeah, and even in the book, a couple times he finds out Al's notes are wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like Al will be like, this person is in this place, and then they're not. All right, I just got to bring this up because I don't want to forget it, and I don't know how much long we can stand talking about this episode. The ending of the episode.
Ian BJ had a complete offline discussion about how
I know you did. That's why I refuse to not share this with everyone else. I mean, the obvious question, of course, is why in God's name does he even have that? Does he need a reminder of what day Kennedy was shot? Because that seems like the type of information that wouldn't be that hard to hold on to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all you had to have him do was find Al's notebook.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need the newspaper clipping. Yeah. Holding up the notebook and being like, what is all this in here? That would have been good enough if you're going to go this route, which he didn't need to, because apparently he's going to have a sidekick now, but I'm sure I'll cry about that in the next episode. It's like, you just gave the guy Scrappy-Doo. What's going on here?
It's like if he's a math teacher and he's carrying around a photocopy of 2 plus 2 equals 4. Why is he carrying that around? That's the last thing he needs is the headline, Kennedy assassinated. Is he worried he's going to get amnesia in the past? Like, maybe that's it. Maybe it's like, just in case, head injury, which actually happens in the book.
I was just going to say that. So,
I guess he was planning ahead for the amnesia. Right.
But, Jeff, I think you hit on a really, really important point here. It's because where do they go with this Scrappy-Doo character now? How long is he gonna be with Jake for? Does he ultimately have to die?
If he's with him, if he leaves Kentucky with this guy and takes this guy to Dallas, this guy will die. I make that pronouncement right now. He dies. So let's move on to question two. How does he die? Does he get killed by Oswald? Or does he get killed by just some, like, random other person?
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to just get hit by a car or something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he definitely – if he's with him when he gets to Dallas, if he's with him – if he gets through the next episode, he's dead.
Yeah. But, I mean, the other thing about that character is in the book he really served he served multiple purposes. He was a roadblock for Jake, but then also he was the guy that was going to be able to take credit for saving the day.
He takes the first time before he resets, he takes the credit for the thing so they don't look for him.
Mm-hmm. And Jeff, I also know you mentioned how in the book Jake gets sick. It's the past fighting back, and he gets this nasty stomach virus. Whereas in the show, we have that one really quick scene that shows Jake is having some kind of problem with his digestive system, and he says, you know, F the past or whatever. He buys his Depends or whatever the equivalent is in 1960, and that's really it. I mean, none of that really plays into the altercation. Is that another element that bothered you, or is that an Easter egg for people that have read the book?
Well, why bother putting it in there then? If your Easter egg is that he buys Kyopectate, oh, thanks a lot. You know, that's your big throwaway thing. Then put it in Derry if you want to throw around Easter eggs.
Yeah.
No, I think they wanted to have the scene in there because they're like, well, this is very important. Well, then make it important.
Yeah.
Because he powers through it with no problem. Like, he keeps going on this whole thing about how the past is so obdurate and this and that. The past wasn't all that obdurate. It made you slightly uncomfortable. He's so sick in the book, he can't get up that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it could have been a moment for some comic relief, which this show sorely needs as well.
Oh, maybe that's what they think this guy's going to be. Maybe he's going to be like this hilarious sidekick that he's going to have.
Mm-hmm. BJ, do you have any other feelings on that? You know, that aspect of the story that they sort of decided to inject but not really fully utilize? Or is that something they're going to back pocket and maybe introduce even later?
You mean the Kaopectate, the stomach problems? I guess it's kind of an introduction to the obdurate past, even though they don't really spell it out very, very much. It's kind of more assume that you know that almost. But, you know, that is something that they have to start getting across, is that the past is going to start trying to stop him mm-hmm. from changing it.
It's not even the obdurate. The past isn't even obdurate in the show. It's mildly inconveniencing.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, he's got to go to the drugstore, and that's it. He goes to the drugstore. That's about.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think there was one shining moment in this episode, and it really could have been a lot more important than it really turned out to be. And that was the family that or the husband and wife that Jake is staying with while he's in Kentucky there. And one night, the husband tells a really, really good story about killing a man in the military. And for me, it was really sort of a way to illustrate what Jake was going to have to do, and really introducing Jake to sort of the ramifications of doing something like that. Even as evil as Dunning might be, you're still killing somebody, and that's something that's going to be with you for a while. And I don't really think any of that registered after that scene took place. It's not like that was something that seemed to be on Jake's mind. BJ, did you have any reactions to that scene and how it sort of ties into the overall theme?
Well, it was pretty obvious what they were going for. I don't know if I would consider it to be very well written. And I think it's another problem where you get this scene that's trying to be overly dramatic, but it doesn't really have a payoff. It's not followed through on. So it doesn't really work for me.
Yeah. For me, this scene would have been really effective if we did have Jake do a reset, and then he's basically decides that he's going to kill Dunning in cold blood. And that's where a scene like this, I think, could have really been effective. Jeff, I know you're really big into a lot of these story points and story points that work and don't work and what writers could have done better. What are your overall feelings on that sequence and how it ties into the rest of the episode?
That was the point of the show where I had the most hope, because those two actors were almost in a different show. Like they elevated their material. They were the only ones that were able to. I don't know the guy's name. The woman is Ned O'Toole. I forget the guy's name, but I've seen him in a bunch of shows.
Yeah, and there was also an Ned O'Toole Stephen King tie-in. She was in it, wasn't she?
Yes, that's right. I forgot about that. Forgot about that. I haven't watched that miniseries in a while. Mm-hmm. And my wife doesn't like clowns, so I can't have that on. Yeah, so you get that moment, like he sits down, and yeah, it's sort of formulaic. But the only part that was good was he kind of gets roped into it, and then I like the husband and wife's like their little back and forth that they have, where it's like, yeah, we're married, but like they're still sniping at each other a little bit. They were fun, and then like you said, that whole part gets submarined because then they never pay it off later.
Mm-hmm.
He does exactly what he was going to do before. Again, he's not proactive; he's reactive, so he has no choice but to kill him. Yeah, I have no stake in it. But if I went into a house where some maniac has a sledgehammer and he's trying to kill his kids and he's broken his wife's arm and I'm standing there and I got a gun on me, I'm going to shoot him.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not I've gone back in time for that purpose. I would kill anybody in that situation. It's just – that's a hot-blooded murder. You have a gun. You're trying to stop a bad person. That is a totally justifiable murder. What he does in the reset to someone who doesn't know what's going on, he just walks up, boom, and kills him.
Yeah, in a cemetery.
Where he's hot-blooded murder, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an aspect of the story that was changed that I think is really going to have that's really going to bother me the most at this point, out of a lot of elements that bother me. So I guess looking ahead, we're of two thoughts here. Jeff, you're on they're completely off the rails. This is uncharted territory. We shouldn't expect to see much from the book moving forward. And BJ, I think you're a little bit more hopeful that they're going to line back up. And I think I am too. And I think mainly there's key points they're going to have to hit. Obviously they're going to have to, deal with the Oswald situation. But I also think now the next big event that we really have to see how it unfolds is the whole Sadie situation. And if they bungle that, I'm really not sure that the series can be saved, because I think that adds a level of complexity to Jake's journey in the book. BJ, where do you fall on that side of the argument?
Yeah, well, I have to think it's going to start. It's going to be more of a representation of the book going forward than this episode was. It has to be. I don't see how Stephen King would be promoting it on his website if they just rewrote the entire thing.
Yeah.
He promoted Under the Dome. He was in Under the Dome, and that was nothing like the book.
I'm so surprised to see this, how this episode was almost completely new writing. It was it was kind of baffling to me. But I don't know. I guess a lot of people probably went into making that decision. I don't, yeah. I mean, a lot of thought must have gone into it, and, you know, a lot of conversations, and then they ended up with what they ended up with. I think a big problem I'm seeing here is every episode has to have a big cliffhanger. And if they're going to do that in every episode, that's not good. You know, he leaves the newspaper. Not only does he inexplicably bring that newspaper article back to the past, he leaves it just lying around for someone to find. And yeah. then it can present us with this big cliffhanger. And, you know, if they're going to try to have some cliffhanger at the end of every episode like that, that's going to be pretty bad. Hopefully the cliffhanger aspect is not going to be as prominent going forward. But yeah, I mean, obviously Sadie's going to be part of the show. So, I mean, is she even going to be a librarian?
Yeah, oh
I guess God. We'll find out.
Jeff, like I said, and you stated earlier, you know, you think they're pretty much on exploring brand new territory here, and, you know, they're going to probably hit story beats. How exactly do you think, how important do you think it is for them to handle the Sadie situation correctly? And, you know, how much do you think it's going to impact the series overall?
Well, if you give the story three main beats, you got your Dunning, Sadie's and her husband's situation, and then Oswald. In the book, the first two are almost more important than the third one to Jake. And the third one is just something that, like, yeah, that's his final goal, is to stop Oswald. But personally, Dunning he likes more, and then the Sadie thing, he ends up loving her. I mean, at this point, they've shown me no indication that they're not going to bungle it. I think you're going to see a lot more of Sadie's husband, way more than you see in the book. Because he's
you're right. I had forgotten.
You're going to see a lot of him, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think you're going to see evidence of abuse. You're going to see stuff like that. They're going to have to make it so obvious. Instead of just, like, hearing about how she was terrorized, you're going to have to see it.
Mm-hmm. I think that's another unfortunate thing, and I really hope that we don't see it. But I do know that with T.R. Knight cast in that role, that I think you are right that we're going to see a lot more of him. But I think in the book it was so much more effective knowing that this woman had a history that she had come out of extremely, extremely damaged. So if nothing else, I have to say that this series is giving us a reason to continue watching, even if at this point we're not agreeing with the choices that they make. Jeff, how on board are you for the next episode?
I'm definitely on board. I mean, I want to see how it ends. The thing I'm banking on is that this is – what is it? 8 episodes, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's 8 episodes, but that's it. It's supposed to be 8 episodes, and it ends. Where Under the Dome completely went off the rails was, I thought that's what it was. I thought it was one season and then over. But it turned out it was just like, oh, we're having really good ratings? Well, we'll just keep doing it. And it ran for like 3 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Well, imagine on the fly just trying to update a book as you keep going. That's pretty much what it ended up being. And just about as successful. That show was so far off the rails, it makes this show look like they're following it beat by beat.
BJ, if you didn't have this show as a commitment, this podcast as a commitment, would you continue watching at this point?
I guess I would.
Mm-hmm.
if I was bored enough, just to see where it's going. But, you know, I was just sitting here thinking, and I realized, so the reason they're kind of painting themselves in the corners here. I think the reason they've introduced this character as discovering this newspaper article is because we had Jake abandoning his mission, and he's going to go back. He's giving up on saving Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So now this guy's going to force him. I mean, is Jake going to go with this guy as a hostage to save Kennedy now? That seems almost like what they're doing. They have to get Jake back on track to save Kennedy, and this guy is the impetus for that, I guess. Because of changes they're making, the changes are snowballing. You know, they're like, okay, we've got him going back. We got him, at the end of the first episode, he's giving up on the mission. He's stopping off at Kentucky before he goes back to 2011 or whatever. But now we got to get him back to Dallas. How are we going to do that? Oh, you know, so Yeah, I mean, so maybe if they get more back on track with the book, the changes will become less and less. Maybe it's just because of how much they changed with the pilot episode.
Mm-hmm.
They have to try. And I guess this second episode was supposed to be overly dramatic just to keep people reeled in or something. But, you know, maybe now it's going to get more back on track with the book.
Yeah.
Now that he's got this. Is that Turkit? Do they give him the same? Even though he's like a younger guy, and Turkit in the book I pictured as a much older guy, but this is basically that character, right? But
yeah. Now in the cast list, his name is Bill Turkit.
Yeah, I suspect this guy's going with him to Dallas because I guess that's how they're getting him back to Dallas in the first place.
Oh goodness!
I forgot about the impetus in the book is he kills Dunning, but when he goes back, Al's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Al patches him up, and then Al dies when he goes back.
Right.
You know what? I'm done. You know what? We'll watch next week, and we'll hope it's better. I'm just going to get aggravated if I keep thinking about it.
Yeah. So if there's anybody out there listening that has a differing opinion here and is enjoying the show more than we are, and either if you've read the book or if you haven't, please let us know on either Facebook or Twitter. I'll include both those links in the show notes because we're very interested in that point of view. So once again, I'll put those notes in the show. I'll put those links in the show notes. And I guess next week we'll be back for episode 3, which, according to my records, is called Other Voices, Other Rooms. So, Jeff, any final words beyond you saying you're pretty much done?
Here's my constant optimism that next week will be better.
All right. And BJ.
How could it not?
All right, guys. Well, thanks for always. I really enjoy sitting down with the both of you to talk this series. And I do look forward to sitting down for our episode 3 discussion. And with that, we'll see you next time.